Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Royal Health Clinic Technical Assistance National Teleconference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Bill Finnefrog. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and welcome to today's call on recruiting health professionals for your rural health clinic. Our presenter today is Tim Skinner, and Tim is the executive director of the 3RNet, which is a recruitment retention, rural recruitment retention network. Tim's based out of La Crosse, Wisconsin. He's been executive director of the 3RNet for about 3.5 years, and Tim said he felt bad for the audience because you don't get to see him, and he's such a handsome guy, he knows that that would add to his presentation. I want to welcome all of our callers to today's 27th call. My name is Bill Finnefrock, and I'm the executive director of the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, and I'm the moderator of today's call. If you're planning to recruit a physician, a PA, a nurse practitioner, certified nurse midwife, or other health professional for your rural health clinic, then today's call will be of great value to you in learning to how to save on your recruiting costs. Today's program is scheduled for 1 hour. We'll go approximately 45 minutes will be our speaker's presentation, and the final 15 minutes will be reserved for a question and answer session. This call series is sponsored by the Health Resources and Services Administration's Federal Office of Rural Health Policy and is done in conjunction with the National Association of Rural Health Clinics. The purpose of the call is to provide valuable technical assistance to the RHC community on RHC information. As I mentioned, today is our 27th call in this series. And as you all know, there is no charge to participate. We encourage you to refer others who might benefit from this series to sign up to receive announcements regarding call dates, topics, speaker presentations. For other information, you can go to the website www.ruralhealth.hrsa.gov/RHC. Today's call is being recorded, and a transcript of the call will be made available and posted on the website at the web address I just provided you. If you have questions or ideas for future topics, please send those to info@narhc.org and put RHC teleconference question or topic in the subject line. Again, I hope you have all received the slides. They were sent out via mail, and they are posted on the ORHP website. At this point, I'd like to turn control of our presentation over to our speaker, Tim Skinner. Tim, it's all yours.
Thank you, Bill. And just so everybody knows, I have a face that's perfect for this kind of presentation, so you don't have to look at it. But I want to thank you, and I hope you all are having a nice, beautiful day like we are here in La Crosse. It's a bright, sunny day. But let's get started, and I will kind of follow the slides here. So the first slide you see are the 3RNet members. It was a picture taken last year at our annual conference, and you may recognize some of those people because they're all from your states. The next slide, it just gives you an idea. We have members in every state. We can have one organizational member per state. And the only state that's not a member is Rhode Island. And the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands is a member, as is the Cherokee Nation. So I just wanted to point that out. The third slide, there isn't anybody on this call that doesn't know this, but this gives you a little foundation about how 3RNet got started and rather why 3RNet got started. Everybody on this call knows that we need more physicians, we need more dentists, we need more medical professionals in general. And I'm not going to read the slide because you all know that. But slide number four, 3RNet was really started in 1995, and it was started as the idea for a national career website. They really wanted something that would be pretty easy for candidates to find and to use and easy for members in states and communities to be able to access those candidates and eventually match them to their communities. More high-quality information, and it's really based here, and it's really based on the premise that those in state and local areas and their communities know more about what's going on there and their needs and are more in touch, particularly more in touch than people in recruitment firms who are 1,000 miles away, and they'll be more responsive. So what do we do? That's slide number five. Basically, our three are net members. Remember, we can have one per state, and then with the Indian nations and territories, we have one per state. Represent about 5,000 communities across the country. And those communities post opportunities. On October 6th, just one day in time, there were just under 29,500 candidates, and about a little over 16,000 of them were physicians. Those are active candidates in the database. On the 20th, which was yesterday, that number grew about 200. So we're continuing to see new active candidates enrolling and checking out and registering on 3RNet. So number six, how does it work? Well, again, our members have to be nonprofit state-based agencies, and they're really dedicated to recruiting physicians. And I have to say primarily most of them are recruiting physicians, dentists, PAs, NPs, and then it goes out to other medical professionals. I do want to make it clear that there's great diversity among state members, some because of their lack of support from their states or lack of budget, have to charge for either posting jobs or placements. So I want to make sure you all know that. You may be in a state that that requires you help support the process of recruitment in that state through some fees. But most of those are on sliding scales, which would be particularly of interest to you in the rural health clinics. 3RNet does provide a national presence or on the Internet for information and job postings. And because the website is the National Rural Recruitment and Retention Network website, people go on there actually looking for rural and underserved communities. And we do have some urban underserved communities also. And then our members also can access our internal resource library. So if you have a question about something, feel free to contact one of our members and say, is there anything on the 3RNet resource library on this subject? And they'll be able to help you. Basically, number seven there, it's really an interactive website. Candidates and physicians can update their information, can change their information, and so can communities and states when they're posting jobs. The current website took about a year and a half to develop. It cost about $175,000, and we're still spending anywhere from $500 to $3,000 a month continuing to develop and update it and upgrade it and be involved in search engine optimization. So it's not the kind of thing that an individual state or community can probably do, but one of the things that we do through membership of the 3RNet is pool all those resources, and then we can do some nationwide ads, we can work on the website, and we can do the kind of sourcing for candidates that is appropriate to our needs. The other nice thing is that every state has its own web page, and they can put a great deal of information on there, and there's great diversity amongst the states. But let me, on the next slide, number eight, this is actually the top of the home page for 3RNet, and you have the address up there, 3RNet.org. And I won't spend a lot of time here, but if you scroll down, which is the next page, you see down at the bottom of the page there, there's a place for employers to log in and register. So go to the next page, which is slide 10. And those of you in the RHCs are employers. So if you've already posted a job and registered as an employer, you can just log in and post another job depending on what's appropriate for the members in that state that you're in. Or you can register as a new one if you haven't done so. Now, as you start thinking about posting jobs, whether it's on 3RNet or any website, I have some cautions and some suggestions. Go around the website that you're looking at and look at other job postings and see what they look like. Look at the good ones and look at the bad ones. Hopefully most of them are good. The other thing is that as you develop anything for posting on a website, do it in a Word document so you can, you know, spell check it and do grammar. If you need to pass it around the office, people can look at it and make sure that's appropriate, and then you can copy and paste into 3RNet or any other website, and that makes it a little easier for you. I have an internet tip for you. If you're going to post a job on the internet, one of the things that happens, particularly nowadays, is that candidates will go on, they'll see a job in any given town, they'll click on it, check it out, and say, well, that looks interesting. Then they'll Google that town. And any other websites that come up or blogs that come up, they're going to look at. So we need to talk about, we'll talk more about this towards the end, we need to talk about your communities being effective and being involved in the recruitment process. I'll give you an example. There's a small town that wanted to post jobs. They called me. We're talking about it. So I was curious. Posted a job. I went to look at the job to see how they did, and it was kind of sad, really, because there was misspellings, there was bad grammar, the words at the beginning of the sentence weren't capitalized, so I called up and said, you know, let's go through this together and make some repairs here. And so we did that, and then I went back and Googled the town. There was a city website. It's a small town of about 800 people. I won't even tell you which state it was in. Googled the town. It was a city website. It had some basic information, and they had some photos from a summer event that they had. And in every photo I looked at, there were people holding beer and smoking cigarettes. That isn't the right choice of a photo to put on a website that's accessible through Google, because a physician who is interested in that community is probably going to check that out. If there's a blog, if there's somebody in your community that has a blog and they've got inappropriate comments, I'd suggest you maybe talk with them, because community involvement in the recruitment process is essential. So if you're going to post opportunities on the internet, Google your town and see what's there. So you're all working on it together. So this next slide, number 11, I just want to show you one state page. I'm not going to show you a whole bunch of them, just this one. And I picked Idaho because you can see a variety of job postings that they have: physicians, PAs, NPs, pharmacists, RNs, midwives, social workers, and other covers a whole bunch. So there's some basic information. The picture changes if you go to the live website. The picture on there will change. There's resources on there. And so it's kind of nice. The next slide just shows one community. I just wanted to give you an idea of what one community looks like. And this is the top of the page for Pondere and their opportunity in this community. And you can see there's some basic information there. If you go to the next page, you scroll down, and it's fairly complete information, and that's what you want to do when you put an opportunity on a website, whether it's 3RNet or any other. And you see that the next slide, slide 14, and it continues to provide more information all the way down to the last slide, which is slide 15 there. You can see it has the local contact information, and below that, Laura Rowan, who some of you may know, who is our state member there in Idaho. So we want to have fairly complete information, and here's an example of one you can look at, and you can look at other job postings also. Now, the next slide, number 16, I need to talk about that a little bit, because 3RNet is very diverse. Frankly, it would be much easier for us if we had a cookie-cutter organization, a cookie-cutter website that said everybody had to do it this way. Well, what works in Wisconsin may not work in Florida, it may not work in New Mexico, and what works in California may not work next door in Nevada. Every state is different, so we've got great diversity, not only among the type of members, and you can see that here, and in that second bullet says primary care organizations should say primary care offices, so excuse me for that. But these are the different kinds of organizations that are members that represent their states. We have a couple of members who are nonprofit organizations in their states. For example, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico are nonprofit organizations that may or may not, and it varies a little bit, may or may not have some budget support from their state legislators. So membership is diverse. The financial support they receive from their states is diverse. So you'll see different, depending on the state that you're in, you know, you might be in California and next door it's done quite differently. You might be in New Mexico and next door in Texas it's done quite differently. So there is diversity there. The next slide gives you a little bit of information at least about the members and their strengths. And excuse me while I take a drink here. All of them really are involved in statewide recruitment and retention, and many of them in community development. They're all connected to various HRSA programs, depending on what kind of an agency they are, and they all are able to help with questions and ideas about recruitment. And again, they have access to the member-only resource materials, which includes a recruitment and retention manual. So feel free to ask them about that. And one of the nice things that we found out is that 3RNet members are very involved in helping to recruit for the National Service Corps and recruiting candidates out. Our members can, for the most part, talk about the National Service Corps, federal loan repayment programs, state loan repayment programs, and then they can also talk about the communities, the hospitals, the clinics, and the healthcare systems in their states that offer incentives for recruitment and or retention. So this next slide, number 18 there, shows the variety of facilities, and it is really covers the whole gamut. Our members are focused, obviously, on rural health clinics, CHCs, critical access hospitals, but they also work with the Mayo Health System, for example. They have some very small clinics in some very small towns. They also work with tribal health. They also work with private practice clinics, little partnerships, and that is particularly true on the dental side. So it's fairly extensive. I want to tell you a little bit about some of the evaluation. We've had the National Research Center, an independent organization, survey the 3RNet since 2003. And you can see that from 2003 to 2007, there were over 20,000 vacancies posted during that period of time. There were over 50,000 applications made by candidates. And I have to tell you what that means is that one candidate may go in and apply three or four or five different places. So one candidate may have more than one application. In fact, if they didn't, I would be concerned. Placements during that period of time, 2,800. The thing that I think most of us feel so good about is our members have made those placements in HPSAs and MUAs. It's been consistently 90% of all the placements have been in HPSAs and MUAs during this period of time. In 2007, 69% of all the applications filled and were physicians, and 18% were non-physicians. That's probably because most of our members, the most critical need in terms of keeping a clinic open, keeping a hospital open, is getting a physician there. So they really concentrate primarily on physicians. That next slide shows you how many physicians were placed during that period of time, a little over 1,700. And if you think about what a for-profit recruitment firm would charge you, and I think we're being fairly conservative here when we estimate $28,000 per placement. Many of them, as you all know, are $30,000 or more. There's a substantial collective savings to these communities. And that means they can, instead of spending $28,000 paying $28,000 to a company that's 2,000 miles away, they can keep that in their community and use it for community development, patient care, things that are important to their community. Here's the list for example, of who goes on to the three-year NIT, for the most part, the biggest group of applicants are physicians. Of those physicians, the largest group, or that collective group we refer to as primary care, but we also have a lot of general surgeons. We'd like to see more psychiatrists, but we're attracting a larger and larger variety of specialists, and it's kind of interesting because that's probably not unexpected with the drop that we've seen nationwide in the number of primary care physicians and the increase in the number of specialty physicians. But we also have dentists and hygienists, and dental and oral health has become an issue in almost every state, so that's really risen to the top. PAs and NPs, who are certainly essential to you folks and also to other clinics, we have a number of those. And then we go on down the list. The other professions list is a very long list, and it really does include administrators, managers, dietitians, all the techs, and any other folks who are essential to providing patient care in hospitals and clinics. This next slide just gives you an idea of placements, the type of physicians. Family practice is the largest specialty that our members place. That's because it's also the most in demand. And in spite of the drop in the number of people who have gone into family practice, that still continues. We're seeing more placements of family physicians than anything else. Other physicians includes psychiatrists, general surgery, OB, on and on and on. I'm pleased to say that we're seeing an increase in the number of dentists that our members are placing, and PAs and NPs continue to be a substantial group. So that continues to go on. The next slide is gives you an idea of what we're continuing to do. I mentioned the diversity amongst the states. If you've been to one rural location, you've been to one rural location. I think we hear that a lot, and it's very true. So our states are diverse, and we've been able to adapt to that. And it's a little maddening sometimes because somebody will call me up from one state and said, "My friend told me we could do this, and how come I can't do that?" And I said, "Because you live in the wrong state." Or you live in a state that actually provides better service because maybe they do something differently. So it really is a diverse group. We're continuing to take a look at workforce needs, medical and healthcare workforce needs, and we've been working with Bill, for example, and NARC, and also with NRHA and some other organizations on those issues, and we'll continue to do so. One of the things I'd mentioned are our recruitment and retention manual that is available through 3RNet members. Now, how do you find the 3RNet members? It's actually very easy. You go to the website, click on locations in the United States map will come up, and you click on your state. So it's pretty easy to find out who your 3RNet member is. It's all public information, and it's right there on the website. And again, the cost effectiveness of 3RNet is pretty well proven when we look at placements of physicians and how much it's saving those communities. So we're continuing to work on that. Now, here's where I have to talk a little bit about community development and a word maybe some of you have heard this word before, recruitention. It's really an awkward, hard word to say, and you're probably wondering why I came up with such a goofy word. Well, I can tell you, it's bothered me for years. I've done recruitment and retention and medical staff development for about 20 years before taking this job, and it always bothered me that we talked a lot about recruitment and retention, but in reality, we'd kind of forget the retention piece. The best recruitment we can do is the recruitment of the people who are already there in our clinics and hospitals. So recruitention says, hey, we're not going to forget that retention side. And when we're recruiting physicians or any other medical professionals for our clinics and hospitals, we're recruiting them with the idea that it's going to be a fit in the community and they're going to stay. So the smaller the town, the more essential it is that we involve the community in the recruitment process. And community development, medical staff development has to go together. Now, if some of you are wondering how can you get your community involved, well, one of the things you can do is to go to ruralhealthworks.org, all one word. That's Rural Health Works, and I'm sure Bill has that address and could send it out, or I can later. Rural Health Works has developed some very, very helpful information so that your community can find out what the value is of a new family physician coming to town, a new pharmacist coming to town, and what that means in terms of dollars to the community, to purchasing in the community. A new family physician probably brings somewhere between $900,000 and $1 million into a community. That's in addition to the revenue of the hospital or clinic. That's enough in a small town to get most small town businessmen interested, businessmen and women interested in participating in the process, and it's important. So we really have to collaborate and work together. Now, that means when we develop a recruitention plan, we have to think about recruitment and retention as one. We have to think about that long-term fit. A candidate has to fit the needs of your clinic, what you need professionally and medically, but it also has to meet the needs of your clinic in terms of the culture of your community and your clinic. And does that medical professional have a background and interest and affinity for the kind of community that you have? So those are the kinds of things you want to think about, and it really is true there on slide 26 that if you want to grow your community or keep it viable, you have to have medical services. And you can't have medical services unless your community is viable and growing. So the two really have to go together. You have to bring together a community development plan and a strategic medical staff plan and then develop a recruitation plan that involves some of the items listed there on that slide. I cannot tell you the number of times that I hear clinics and hospitals say, okay, we're going to recruit. They put some information out. They'll get a surprise, surprise, they get a candidate back via email, get a CV, and then they won't be ready to deal with it. That CV will sit around on somebody's desk for 6 weeks. Meanwhile, the candidate hasn't heard back from anybody and has gone on to somebody else. It's probably one of the biggest frustrations that people see is that people at the local level aren't responding. So that's critical. Plan ahead for that and have everything ready. The other thing that I've heard from residents, and I can tell you a real quick story, a resident that I used to work with who went to a town of 500 people, was offered a job, he and his wife, that was a dream location, a lot of hunting, a lot of fishing in the middle of nowhere, came back and he said, Tim, they offered me a job and it's great. I said, well, great, tell me the details. He said, well, they're not sure how much they're going to pay me, and they don't know how they're going to deal with malpractice, and they're not certain what health insurance is going to be, and, well, actually, they didn't say anything. They don't know about CME. And I said, well, do they have a contract? He said, well, they're not sure how they're going to do that. And by the time he got done, he came in the door very excited, and by the time he got done telling me about it, he was very disappointed. So I said, well, let's call them up and see what we can do to help. They were not ready. They had a very excited young couple who were ready to move to that community. They had a job, but they weren't prepared for it. They lost him. He went to another town about 150 miles away, where, incidentally, he's still there 6 years later. It's kind of sad, really. So we have to be prepared to interview. We have to be prepared to talk about compensation. We have to be prepared up front to either give people a letter of offer or a boilerplate contract when they come to interview and say, here's what it'll look like. We'll fill in the details later. So we have to have that information available. So that's pretty much the end of my presentation, and I want to thank you all for all the work you do out there because I know what it's like and have a feeling for it. I've done it myself. So I would like to open it up to questions, and Bill, I hope there are some.
Well, yeah, before we open up the lines, I actually have a couple, Tim, that I'd like to have you expand on a little bit. I guess, first of all, so if I'm a rural health clinic and I'm looking for a physician and I want to go to the 3RNet, I go to your website, I find the state that I'm from, I click on that. That will tell me the agency within the state that you're partnering with. But then what do I have to be prepared to do?
Well, thanks. That's the first step, is to see who they are. I think if I were in that rural health clinic, I would pick up the phone or send a quick email and say, I would like to post a job on 3RNet, and have that conversation about how it works in their state. Then it's very easy from there. You go back to the home page, scroll down to the very bottom of the home page, and register as an employer. And when you do that, you put your information in about your community, your clinic, your contact information, and then you can post a job. So it's really pretty easy. Again, if you do that, I really recommend getting all the information together in a Word document, you know, doing all the spell check and the grammar check, and then doing a copy and paste into the website. Does that answer your question, Bill?
In terms of, yeah, and in terms of the content of that, is there, do the states typically provide any assistance or guidance? I know you mentioned you suggested that people go and look at what others have put in their postings and use that perhaps as a guide. But are there any good resources in terms of helping to develop those job descriptions? What kinds of things providers are looking for to perhaps emphasize? You know, you talked about the young physician, and it sounded like there were community benefits, the hunting, the fishing, those intangible things that are out there that attracted him and his family to the community as opposed to necessarily the medical environment. Are there resources, are there places that people can go to kind of get those types of tips?
Well, there are, and actually the first place I'd start would be with your 3RNet member in your state. But there also, we have information, because they can access our members-only section and get the information on the recruitment and retention manual. But the other thing, on the website itself, if somebody posts a job, you're kind of guided through it with a template. So here's some community information. The community information should really reflect some honest appraisal of your community. You don't want to oversell, and you don't want to undersell. And there are articles out there. And, Bill, I can send some of those to you if you want me to disperse, or if you wanted to send those out later.
Sure, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, I can send a couple to you and a couple of links that will cover that.
Okay.
But people want to know, they want a general idea about who's in the clinic, who are the other professionals there. They want to know how big the community is. They want to know, are the schools reasonable? They want to know, is there a movie theater there? They want to know how far they have to drive to go to a movie theater. If there's hunting, fishing, hiking, boating, golfing, those are things that attract people. I actually, years ago, put an ad for a family physician in Sports Afield about 20 years ago to see what would happen, and I actually got a few calls for one of our small towns. I don't recommend that because it was very expensive and it didn't get enough response to make it really worthwhile, but it was an interesting experiment. So people are very interested. What is critical is lifestyle. And what I would talk with doctors when I was recruiting, they said, well, Tim, how far away, what's your commute like to the clinic? And I would say, well, you know, I actually have to drive around in the morning quite a bit to finish a cup of coffee on the way to work. So you have more time for family activities. The smaller the town, if the school's nearby, it's easier to get to the school, see the kids' activities. I mean, for those who are making a 45-minute to a 60-minute white-knuckle commute in a large metropolitan area, there's some real advantages to a smaller community. And I'll send you, rather than trying to go through the list, Bill, I will send some things. I'm thinking of some other things, too, that I can send you.
Okay.
You can send out.
Operator, let's open up the lines and take some questions from our audience. And I may have a few if we fall a little bit short, but why don't we see what kind of questions are out there from the folks listening in today.
Thank you, sir. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. At this time, if you do have a question, you may signal by pressing star 1 on your touchtone phone. If you are using a speakerphone today, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 if you do have a question. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. We do ask that you please state your name and your location before posing your question. And once again, star 1 if you do have a question.
This is your opportunity to ask questions of one of the nation's experts on recruiting health professionals for rural communities. While we wait, Tim, and you touched on this, but in terms of the cost, there is no cost?
Well, there might be, Bill.
Okay.
Some states have a small posting fee to post a job. Some states have a sliding scale that actually goes from $0 to $5,000 when somebody is placed. So it varies, and again, that depends on the amount of support they've gotten in their states for recruitment and retention. Some states, well, the state I live in, for example, has there's really no financial support from the state to maintain the Office of Recruitment and Retention for the state, and that's our state member. So all their placements then require a placement fee that's considerably smaller than a recruitment firm.
And is this just paid by the employer? What about the providers?
No, providers never pay. The employer who hires that person would pay that fee, that either a posting fee or a placement fee. Thanks for asking that. Yeah, providers should never be charged as a part of a process of recruitment and retention. That's just going to turn them off.
Okay.
And we do have a couple of questions in the queue. We'll go ahead and take our first question.
Go ahead, caller, and please identify yourself by name and where you're calling from.
Yes, I'm Jim Crawford from Dexter, Missouri.
Go ahead, Jim.
Am I to understand, or did I understand you correctly, that only nonprofit rural health clinics can use this service?
Not quite, Jim. A number of healthcare facilities, critical access hospitals, rural health clinics, community health clinics, private nonprofit healthcare facilities, partnerships, it goes on and on. What we do not allow people from recruitment firms to post jobs on our site. So if you have a job you want to post on our site, Jim, you can do that in Missouri very easily.
Okay.
But we do not allow recruitment firms.
I understand, but I just want to be sure as a for-profit organization.
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, I think that was the – because we run into that at different times, Tim, where folks will say, oh, well, if you're a nonprofit RHC, you can participate, but if you're a for-profit RHC, you can't. You don't make that distinction.
No, we don't.
Okay.
No. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we have – sometimes there's small physician partnerships, and partnerships are really for profits. They kind of have to be. So some of them are very essential to their communities, and we want to our members support that recruitment too. So it varies.
Okay. Next question, operator.
And just a reminder: if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, this is Tony. I'm calling from Long Prairie, Minnesota. And my question is in regards to, you were talking about finding the niche for the provider that you're trying to recruit, such as hunting, fishing, whatever. What we have struggled with for a long time is we end up recruiting J1 physicians, and because we're such a rural community, culturally we really struggle with that. Can you talk to that at all?
Yeah, thanks, Tony. That's a good question. And how's everything in Long Prairie? You're kind of a next-door neighbor in a long sort of way.
Yeah, it's very well. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, you know, one of the things that we do know from some studies that have been done, one in Wisconsin, one in Colorado, that for sure, is that physicians on J-1 visas have to be recruited just like we would recruit United States citizens. We have to look at the fit. Do you have in your community the kinds of things that they need? For example, I can remember hiring a physician who, in a small town of 700 people that was 80 miles from anywhere, which in some of your states is pretty close by, needed a certain kind of church. He said 80 miles was fine. Well, it didn't take too long to find out that 80 miles wasn't fine. So we have to really be honest with ourselves and look at the fit. And when we do that, we're much more likely to have them stay. The other thing is that in those same two studies in Colorado and Wisconsin, what they found was that physicians on J-1 visas stayed past their three-year obligation when the community welcomed them. And that's why that community involvement is so important on the front end. The community welcomed them, made them a part of the community. They were welcomed in the practice. They had the same mixture of patients that the other physicians did in the practice, and they were involved in the decision-making of the practice. So all those things are pretty critical on the retention side, but we aren't going to get there if the community just doesn't have. I mean, not only are these people from out of state, they're from out of the country. And some of the things, what some communities are doing, some practices, they're hiring physicians maybe from India or Pakistan and saying, you know, we understand that instead of a two-week vacation, we'll give you 2 weeks but allow you to take another, you can take a whole month off, maybe pay you for 2 weeks off and take a month out, and we'll figure it out because when you go back, you'll be able to spend a little more time. So there's some things that go on there and that are helpful. You know, I'd have to ask you, Tony, do you have any better success recruiting U.S. candidates than you do physicians on J-1 visas and also H-1 visas, too?
So, no, we really don't. We actually have had better luck recruiting J-1s, but it seems like I can't say this because our last one that just left was from India. He was here for 8 years.
Oh, okay.
And he told me that from day one the community was very welcoming. They loved it here. But culturally, they miss their temple and all of the things that our little community cannot offer them. So they moved back to the metro.
Yeah, and that's pretty typical. But to have any physician in this day and age stay 8 years is actually pretty good, particularly a younger physician. Which, by the way, we are going to see more and more younger physicians. They're not going to stay in one place like their predecessors did. They're going to move around. We know that from looking at generational diversity. So if you got a physician for 8 years, you did well.
Well, and I think, you know, Tim, that point is it's not exclusive to healthcare. I mean, I think you're seeing that generationally.
Exactly.
With individuals that, you know, being somewhere 3 to 5 years, they consider that to be a long-term commitment, whereas, you know, for my father's generation, he worked at the same place for 40 or 50 years. And young people today just don't see themselves in those kinds of situations. So I do think that it's good advice that people be prepared for the prospect that you may be in a situation where, you know, you're revolving, it is a revolving door, but hopefully it's one that maybe is only revolving every 5 years, not every 6 months, but that the prospects or the potential of keeping someone for a lifetime, you know, may not be what they were 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. You know, in the late 80s, very early 90s, I can remember talking to family practice residents and saying, yeah, we have a little practice in a town of 4,000 people. There are two physicians there now, and if you join, there'll be three. So call will be one and three. And they're going, call will be one and three? That's wonderful. That's great. One and three? And you mean I get to practice the full scope of family medicine and do OB? And I'm going, yeah, you know, that's right. Now today, when you talk about the practice with with primary care residents, if anybody said, boy, I'm really excited about call of 1 and 3, I'd probably keel over. I think, as most people know, they don't want to be on call. If they do, it's got to be 1 and 8, 1 and 12. And they want to work 8 to 5. I admire them for separating their professional life from their personal life a little better than us baby boomers have been able to do. But it's a real conundrum for those of us in small rural communities. And I think we're going to see more use of PAs and NPs. We're going to see more job sharing somehow or another. And I hope that states are opening up their licensing of PAs and NPs in a way that will support them, because physicians aren't going to work the way, as Bill said, the way baby boomers had, and this generation that's in school right now is going to work much differently. So if you're not looking at generational diversity out there, you really might want to take a look at that. It's very interesting and kind of fun. But to plan ahead, these kids in school right now aren't going to work. They're going to work together. Three or four of them will work together. They're going to get their jobs done. And the whole job done that I'd take 40 hours, they're going to get it done in about 15, because three of them done it together. And say, okay, we're done. We're out of here.
Yep.
Now, in healthcare, that's a problem. In the computer world, maybe you can do that. So we're going to have to be pretty adaptable.
Operator, do we have any questions out there?
Gentlemen, there appear to be no further questions at this time.
Okay, let me just ask you to explore a little bit more. You mentioned the Rural Health Works, and in particular, I believe they just came out with a report. I think I just got it this week, in fact, showing the financial impact of having a healthcare provider in a community for other businesses. Essentially, that if the healthcare provider is in a community A and there's not a healthcare provider in community B, the community A with the healthcare provider will do better economically, because when people come in to see the doctor or whoever their health professional is, well, I'll take care, I'll do my grocery shopping or I'll do my other business while I'm in town for the doctor. Data out there that shows that there is economic value to having a health professional in your community. Can you talk a little bit more about how to use that with the business community in terms of helping you in your recruitment efforts?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And as I mentioned earlier, the smaller the community, the more important it is anyway to combine the efforts of the community and the medical staff recruitment process. If the community is kind of unengaged and appears to be uninterested, using the Rural Health Works information that shows the value of the economic impact of a physician or a pharmacist or another medical professional, if you can show to your community, say, look, if we work together to make this an attractive package, an attractive community, and an attractive medical practice, and we can do this because here's the value to the community, not just to the clinic, not just to the hospital, but here's how much money that generates in our town. That's going to get the decision makers in the community and the stakeholders in the community, I think, pretty interested in participating in the recruitment process. So how do they participate? They can help when you talk with candidates. You know, when I was sitting as a recruiter, I couldn't answer each and every question. It's nice to have somebody who's a local banker or a local realtor or somebody who knows about farm values. It's nice to be able to say, I don't know the answer to that, but I will have so-and-so call you. And they can be involved that way. One of the things that I think they can do, if they see the economic value to the community, they can also say, well, you know, we will come up with X number of dollars to do a signing bonus for somebody, or we'll help with relocation, or we'll help with compensation the first 2 years. There's a variety of things I think that can be done that would be very helpful. And when community people see the value of that, they're going to go, oh my gosh, you know, a family physician brings $1 million a year into my community. And, yeah, I'm going to help with that. So So, you know, get them involved in the recruitment process, in the decision making, supporting it, and maybe even financially.
Okay. Operator, any questions, service?
We do have a couple of questions in the queue.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, caller, you're up.
All right, this is not so much a question. This is Natalie Gonzalez, a 3RNet member from Washington. But when you referenced a report, I wanted to share that the Association of Academic Health Centers just issued a report last month, I believe. It's not something that everyone wants to read. It's called Out of Order, Out of Time. But if you're really looking at the nation's health workforce, it's a good read. But there was something in it that I wanted to just read because I think it kind of fit in with what Tim was saying about the differences, and that sometimes we make more of the differences than there are. And I'm going to read a quote, and Tim, you get to guess what year this came from. From the big cities and from the forks of the creek, the people ask for more physicians, nurses, dentists. There are not enough general physicians, and most of those we have are so busy they cannot give the patient the time and sympathetic care the old family doctor could give. What year?
I'll go out on a limb here and say about 1990.
Okay, it was 1952,
okay.
And it was the President's Commission on the Health Needs of the Nation.
So things have changed dramatically, huh?
Right. Well, what it is that we talk about the differences. You know, the statement that today's physicians are not matching the quality of the older physician. They thought that in 52, and I'm sure in 1908 as well. So give them a chance.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks, Natalie. I appreciate that. Operator, we have another question?
We do.
Go ahead, caller.
This is Brian Batchelder from Ohio. And you partially answered the question, I think. I'm in a small town, and the small town nearby, about 4 miles away, has lost a physician, and I'm considering opening a second rural health clinic in that area. The whole county, really.
4 miles away?
Yeah, about 4 miles away.
Okay.
And so I guess one kind of the specific question I have is, and this doesn't relate exactly, but does the second rural health clinic need a second inspection, or does a second rural health clinic automatically get the favor of the first rural health clinic that's sponsoring it? That's a little
now,
off the
clinic, I'll take that one.
That's a little off your topic, but then to take it back to your topic, can you give any pearls for a office opening a second office in a nearby town, and as far as recruiting a PA or physician to staff that's more on topic for this.
Let me answer the first question, Tim, and then you can answer the pearls question. Every facility must be able to stand alone as a rural health clinic. There really is no such thing as a satellite of a rural health clinic. So that second office would have to go through the designation as if it had no affiliation. It can be affiliated with you, and you can do a joint cost report, and there are other things you can do. But in terms of qualifying as a rural health clinic, it has to meet the qualification, survey and certification standards, staffing requirements, et cetera, as a standalone rural health clinic.
Okay.
So, Tim.
Okay, thanks. Brian, the second part of your question, I think I would really concentrate, number one, on PAs, obviously primary care physician, but if you can take a PA, I would start with your state PA association. Now, Ohio, I think, has one. Most states do. I have to admit I haven't looked recently, but I think they've got one. There's also training programs nearby. I would contact all those training programs and let them know you have an opportunity available. And then also talk with our member there in Ohio and see if you can post a job for a PA or a primary care physician. Then you can also, you can go to the American Association of Physician Assistants, AAPA website, and I don't have it right in front of me, but Google it. Google's a great tool. And you can find their career website, which is actually supported by Healthy Careers. and you can post a job there. So there's quite a bit you can do for PAs, and it's nice that you can take a PA or a nurse practitioner, and the Healthy Careers also runs the nurse practitioner's professional career website. So, go ahead.
No, Tim, you made me think of something, though. What about, one of the things that we learn is that, the more that providers are exposed to a practice setting during their educational phase, the greater the likelihood that they would practice in that environment once they are fully licensed. Do you have any comments about clinics opening up their facilities as training sites to have students do clinical rotations and how that might be helpful in the long-term recruitment and retention of health professionals?
Bill, thanks for asking that, because there is a substantial body of information that shows that, and I think everybody probably knows this, but it shows that people from rural areas are more likely to practice in rural areas. But a bigger determination, at least for primary care physicians, family practice, is they tend to practice where within 90 miles of where they've trained, or they go to where family is. And that's not necessarily the physician's family, it may be the spouse's family. Now, we also know that there are a number of programs that have been going on and some developing where those programs that take medical students and those programs that take residents and those programs that take PAs and NPs for training, those students are going to go out there, or those residents are going to go out there, they find out that, there's good medicine in rural areas. It's a good place to practice. I like this community. People are nice to me. They welcome me. I'm having some fun. They're much more likely to go to that community. And there are Dr. Bob Bowman, who's written quite extensively about this, for example, has a great deal of research about it. You can actually Google Bob Bowman, MD, and you can find a great deal. But it's been pretty well established that if we can get people out into rural areas during their training programs, they're much more likely. Maybe they won't practice right in your community, but they're much more likely to go to at least to another rural community.
Yep. Well, operator, we can take one last question. If not, we go ahead and wrap it up.
There are no further questions.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and wrap up today's call. I want to thank Tim Skinner, the Executive Director of the 3RNet, for his great insight and observation and comments today. He's given you his website. I would encourage all of you to take a look at it, particularly those of you who may be in need of recruiting a health professional for your rural health clinic. I want to thank all of those who took the time to ask some questions today, and remind you that a transcript of the presentation will be available on the ORHP website in the near future, and also that a recording of this call will also be made available. The next Rural Health Clinic Technical Assistance teleconference is tentatively scheduled for the second Tuesday in December. A notice will be sent by email to those who are registered for the call series and the details on the next call. I want to thank you again and thank the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy for their support of this project, and we look forward to having you participate in our next Rural Health Clinic Technical Assistance teleconference call. Thank you, and have a great day.